It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is a lot of folks are ready for this one. And this is in the wee hours of Monday morning as Ed has made his way back from the stadium. And Ed, as we get started here, that was quite an interesting scene before the game with you and other reporters down on the field monitoring Dak. And I have to wonder, I think you kind of knew there was a sense that they were going to go with Cooper Rush. Was all that stuff for show, do you think? Like trying to make the Vikings to the last minute, you know, prepare for both quarterbacks? Or did you sense they truly were, you know, trying to give Dak every chance to play in that game?
So I went out to the Star on Wednesday and Thursday, and because I was assigned the game in Minnesota and the Dak injury thing was going to be the dominant storyline. And I really thought after talking to McCarthy and people on Wednesday that there was a pretty good chance that Dak was going to start the game. But then talking to Dak on Thursday at the Star, he just seemed to make so many references to the big picture. This isn't my decision. If it was my decision, I would play, but other people are probably going to be involved in this. You know, he wanted to play in the last game, a reference to the Super Bowl. He talked about his team in terms of being a team that has established itself as a contender, and that maybe the worst way to ruin it all would be for him to play prematurely. And so then from that point on, I really began to think that Cooper Rush was going to play. And then you look at, well, Dak was doing rehab sessions. Dak was, you know, doing the walkthroughs with the first team, but Cooper Rush was getting all the practice snaps with the starters. That I think kind of reinforced the idea that Cooper Rush in all likelihood was going to start the game. But everything I got, and I reported on Saturday afternoon before I left to fly to Minneapolis through some other cities I didn't expect to visit on my way because of all the American Airlines cancellations. You know, you're always hesitant when somebody says, oh, he's going to be a true game time decision. But then somebody else amplified that and said, hey, we're going to take every minute we can, you know, leading up to pregame to make this decision. And so I reported it that way on television this morning because I finally really believe that that was going to happen. So many times people say, hey, he's a game time decision. We're going to work him out and make a decision. And that never happens. In this case, it really happened. Cooper Rush said that he was not told that he was starting the game until after he and Dak went through their respective warmups. The first sign that they were taking it seriously was that Mike McCarthy came out and watched Dak. And then Britt Brown at the end of that, the director of rehabilitation that McCarthy had said was going to be influential in this decision. He talked to Dak, and then he, Dak, and McCarthy all got together and they had a confab. I think then McCarthy at the end of that kind of patted Dak on the back, which made it seem like he just delivered bad news and wanted to reassure him that they were doing the right thing. And then McCarthy went over and talked to Stephen Jones, and he went over and talked to Will McClay and Jerry Jones, and they all left. And at that point, I think it was pretty obvious that Dak Prescott was not going to play this game. And the Cowboys' hopes of – I thought the Cowboys were putting Dak's long-term health ahead of winning an individual game, which is what McCarthy said would be the basis of this decision.
All right. Lots more to come. And also our grades with Glenn Stretch-Smith. There is one extremely harsh grade he is ready to give this evening. All of that will happen after we – play the music, Frito. All right, it is Doomsday Podcast, and Ed is in Minneapolis. Ed, by the way, the atmosphere for years, it was over there at the Metrodome. They're now in that new facility. You've now been to the new stadium there in Los Angeles, seen what that's like with an actual crowd in there. Although some of these places have been very pro Cowboys crowd. What does this place, I never minded going to the Metrodome, partially because same thing about, I like going to see games in Detroit because they let the media kind of sit out a little bit with the fans, in a sense. Those particular buildings, you felt like you were a little more out there and could hear the atmosphere a little better. What is this experience like?
Well, I thought the Metrodome, and I covered a lot of games here because I was a Brett Favre guy, and he played two seasons here. In fact, I was in the parking lot reporting live when the dome collapsed, and the Vikings game had to be moved to Detroit the following Monday. But I always thought the Metrodome was really dark and excessively loud. The new stadium, I think, is in the daytime, but there's so much glass in it that it almost looks like the game's being played outdoors. Mm. Obviously not the case tonight because it was dark outside, but I think it's big. It's impressive. It looks good on television. The lighting is outstanding. The crowd was loud, but I think there was a fair number of Cowboy fans again at this game, as we've seen really, you know, throughout the season as they build this momentum and have now reached 6-1. So while playing in the environment on the road against a good defense with your backup quarterback is less than ideal, the crowd element of it wasn't the hostility that you might ordinarily have to deal with, but it was still challenging, I think. But I was really impressed with how well the Cowboys got in and out of the huddle, how well he got the play in, the coaches got the plays in. You know, they always seemed like they were operating with a great deal of confidence and control, and everybody knew what was going on all the time, despite all of those difficult elements that you face when you play on the road.
You know, Ed, I didn't think when it was 10-3, even at halftime, they did a good job of holding them to that field goal before the half. But I just didn't think Cooper Rush, to me, I mean, there were some decent moments, but mostly bad moments. And I just didn't think they were going to win that game. I just didn't think he was really going to give them any chance. And it is kind of remarkable what they were able to pull off in the second half. I think the first thing that comes to mind is that Cedric Wilson hitting that quickly in that 73-yard touchdown where Wilson kind of juked a couple of guys there at the end. But that throw, Ed, I mean, it was just like we saw that bad interception. It was a tip ball, but it was really a poor throw. There were some throws behind receivers. I didn't think Rush was really in that good of a rhythm. And then all of a sudden, boom, he hits that, and I felt like that just gave him great confidence throughout the rest of the game. But I mean, in thinking about like great moments in Kellen Moore's assistant coaching career, he'll soon be a head coach, but this has to be pretty high up there to get this guy ready. And I think as Cowboys observers, and I think Cowboys fans are like this too, recently we've seen Dalton, who's kind of okay, and then DiNucci, that was embarrassing, and then Gilbert almost got him a win, but we're just sort of conditioned not to expect that much from backups. But this guy gets the job done. I would say, you know, when you look back on the season, whatever happens, if they do end up having a great season, I think this ends up being a pretty important win.
Yeah, and, you know, the Vikings were the first opponent that the Cowboys defeated last season with a backup quarterback after Dak Prescott's season-ending ankle injury. So that makes it two times in a row. But, you know, like you said, last year, that was a veteran quarterback in Andy Dalton. It wasn't Cooper Rush making his first NFL start. And it was in an empty stadium here in Minnesota, not, you know, one of the loudest venues in the league. And, you know, I think when you don't have your starting quarterback, you have to kind of create a different kind of game, one you can win. The Cowboys knew, you know, they scored 35 points, 5 weeks in a row with Dak Prescott. They knew they weren't going to score like that. And so if they let the Vikings score that way, it was going to be an impossible situation. But You know, they played from behind, but they created kind of a low scoring game. Their defense didn't create any turnovers, and the Cowboys actually had two, the Cooper Rush interception and his lost fumble when he got sacked, both by Xavier Woods, the former Cowboy who is renowned for having the defensive philosophy that you don't have to go hard every play, nor can you be expected to do so. But I thought they consistently on defense got off the field. You know, the Vikings went 1 for 13 on third down. And it was really kind of remarkable after the game. I want to let you back in here in a second, but, you know, Cooper Rush was walking toward the locker room with the game ball under his arm, and Dak came running up from behind and grabbed him and hugged him, and to the point that Cooper had his second fumble of the night. Dak actually knocked the ball out of Cooper's hands. But, you know, Cooper Rush said in his press conference after the game that he's kept track. This really resonated with me. He's kept track, and he's prepared for games 50 times that he never got to play in. You know, he first signed in 2017 as an undrafted free agent, started his first game tonight for Prescott, had been released by the Cowboys, signed and cut by the Giants, returned to Dallas last year when Dalton got hurt. And last year, remember, when Prescott was hurt, the Cowboys started four different quarterbacks, and Cooper Rush was not one of them. And then he went to training camp, and the expectation was he's going to get beat out by Garrett Gilbert. And that didn't happen. He made the team, and tonight gets his first win with his family there. It was kind of a unique scene.
It was, and I think the thought was, well, they're going to have to lean on the running game. And they end up rushing for 78 yards. And obviously, he throws for 325 yards, two touchdowns, had the one interception, was sacked three times. Ed, that was a interesting stat, wasn't it? The first time since I think there've been two Cowboys that in their first starts threw for over 300 yards.
Right.
And the other one was Gary Hogaboom, who also played at Central Michigan. I mean, that is
Hogaboom's was in 1984.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how long it's been. Yeah.
Yeah, which would have been about the time that Coach Landry, and he called him, like, he was kind of nervous, I think, when he made that announcement. He was going to start him over Danny White, and so he called him, I think, Hogan Bloom at
the time. Well, yeah, and you mentioned Cooper Rush's stats, and you can't compare him to every Cowboys quarterback in their first start because some of these guys started week one as rookies like Dak did. You know, Romo, though, who waited to play, threw for 270 yards in his first career start. Dak, who started game one of his rookie year, 227 yards. Roger Staubach, 220 yards. And Troy Aikman, three-time Super Bowl winning Hall of Fame quarterback, had 180 yards in his first NFL start. So, like I said, you can't compare them all the same. He probably is more similar to Romo in the sense of how long he waited to actually get a start. So, like he said, he's been around the team. You know, Kellen Moore went to him before the game and said, look, just run the plays. It's the same. They're the same plays that you're familiar with since 2017. You know, don't make it bigger than it is. And, you know, Rush said he tried to keep it simple. He said, you know, I was fortunate that I got to go out with so many other great players. I mean, you know, great offensive line, great receivers, great, you know, really good tight ends, one of the best running backs in football. And so he had a great supporting cast. And, you know, for much of the first half, you know, I was reading on Twitter, a lot of people were criticizing the Cowboys for not having a better quarterback, backup quarterback. And I sort of did that too this morning because I said it was like the one weakness on their offense appeared to be the backup quarterback. And why would they do this when Dak was coming off in a year where he had a major injury and missed 11 games. And it was very obvious to them how important he was to their ability to win games. And then, you know, Cooper Rush at halftime, I said something like, I tweeted a kind of a snotty thing. I said, Cooper Rush is going to need a big second half to get to the 21 points the Cowboys have averaged with their backup quarterbacks the last 2 years. And he didn't quite make it, but he went from 3 to 20. And his performance was pretty good in that 2 minute drive at the end of the game.
Yeah, I would say so. And I would also agree with that. That was a snotty tweet. And he, you know, he answered and I was really on your tweets before the game, especially trying to kind of monitor what was going on with Dak. Ed, the I'm looking at some of the play-by-play right now, and I thought that third and 11 play at the Minnesota 20. You know, they're down there, and you're thinking, well, at least they can put this thing into overtime and tie the game up and get in position. So, there was one play there to Zeke, and that was remarkable. Where he just, you know, he's just sometimes physically just stronger than just almost anybody on the field, and on that particular play, you know what I'm talking about. They throw one to him, and he broke one tackle, and then he like just ran over a linebacker. I mean, it was a missed tackle by a defensive back, and I think a linebacker as well. And those are the moments where, even though he only ran for 50 yards, you sort of are reminded how hugely important he is to this team. Yeah.
He's a fiercely competitive guy, and you know, a lot of what he had to do tonight was pick up blitzing, you know, linebackers and safeties, and sometimes he succeeded and sometimes he didn't, but he's always willing to try to win the game without having the ball in his hands. And on the play you're talking about, that was a pivotal moment in the game. It obviously set them up to win the game in regulation rather than be forced to play in overtime. And how about the Amari Cooper 33-yard balancing act catch? I mean, what a demonstration of elite-level concentration. And then the touchdown catch, which was really a run-pass option, but Cooper Rush saw that Amari Cooper was single-covered and thought he would win man-to-man. But then to have the body control to get his feet down quickly like he did in that situation, just really remarkable. You know, bunch of plays that allowed the Cowboys to succeed in the last minute and take the lead and ultimately win the game.
And Ed, in conversations after the game, and I know you were working the locker room and you had a chance to talk to Amari, but I'm really kind of liking this. Amari basically said that on that touchdown play in the, it was called like a double left, I think is what that play was. And CD, apparently, according to Amari, was really, really wanting the ball and even said in the huddle, you know, hey, Coop, you want me to take this one? And according to to Cooper, he said, hell no. and he made the play and got the touchdown. And it was a beautiful catch. And then he held it against his body to, you know, to make that catch. And by the way, Ed, one of the things that at times he's been criticized for is, you know, late in games, having some moments where physically he wasn't able to go. And there's maybe a Patriots game that comes to mind. You know, there are a couple of games you would remember those that
Chicago
was a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. They lost. Yeah.
He was not able to be on the field. And in this particular game on that last drive, he was over there and they had a tennis ball on his like quad, and they were trying to rub that out, whatever he was suffering from, and yet he was able to go out there and make that huge play. So I mean both he and CD had great games. I'm glad for CD's that, you know, for CD's sake, that drop that could have ended up being
third down drop. But yeah, I mean, this is the second time that both Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb have gone over 100 yards in the same game this season. They also did it week one against the Bucs. They're the only receiver tandem in the NFL to do that twice so far this season. And they did it with a backup quarterback tonight. So that was pretty remarkable. And, you know, obviously we talked about the Cowboys and, you know, really the only way, the fact that they have such a big lead in the division really allowed them the luxury of saying, hey, let's look at the big picture and let's not put Dak at risk, because if we're not convinced he's ready now and he goes out and gets hurt, That means that 2 weeks wasn't enough for him to heal from the original injury. And now how long is he going to be out? You know, I tried to make the point earlier today, you know, Michael Gallup suffered a calf injury week one, hasn't played since, just got back to practice. He's missed five games already. And so if Dak were to aggravate his and it got to that level, I mean, you could have to play a month and a half or 2 months without Dak Prescott. And that's how you could lose the division. And you certainly wouldn't keep pace with the, what is it, five teams in the NFC that began today with a single loss, the Cowboys being one of those. So as it turned out, it was, you know, they were able to win the game, retain their lead in the East, stay with the top front runners in the NFC, and protect Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and I think in this case, you know, he will be better for the stretch run because of this. They were willing to take this loss. Well, it didn't end up being a loss. Now, we'll remind you that there have been some quarterbacks like, you know, Bridgewater that year with the Saints that had a really nice run. I can't remember if they went 4-0 or 5-0 when Breeze was out. And so I don't think the Cowboys are going to have to do that. But at least Rush showed that he can be a competent quarterback. And I, even at halftime, I was not really ready to say that. And then He answered the bell with that big throw. You know, they were playing their safeties pretty wide. And I've gone back and watched that throw. I mean, he zipped that thing. You know, he's not like a strong arm quarterback, I don't feel like. But I mean, he ripped that ball to Cedric Wilson. And that just changed the whole complexion of the game. I mean, and it was almost kind of like the Vikings went into a little bit of a funk after that. You know, that thing got into just a messy little field goal kicking game after that. And then the Cowboys go down. I mean, think about that. You've got a guy that's got to lead you down the field from his own 20 or whatever to go, not to try to tie a game, but he goes down there and wins the game. And I think that's why everybody was so excited. Not only the Joneses, but I don't know if you could look up there and see the TV, but it was fun to see Cooper Rush's family in their number 10 jerseys, and they were having a big time. All right, Ed, I do want to say one of our new sponsors is Goodness Steak Seasoning. Family tradition has turned into quite a up-and-coming business, created in 2008 by Jason Vallow, a father of four, lives right here in the Metroplex, Ed. And in fact, I was just, Ed, if you can see this, I'm going to hold this up in front of the camera so you can have a look at this. There's the Goodness Steak Seasoning. Yeah. Packaging, it's a Texas herbs and spices, Goodness Steak Seasoning. Great on steaks, also perfect on chicken, hamburgers, grilled vegetables, and much more. Just go to bringthetasty.com to order your bottle today. And a jar or two of Goodness Steak Seasoning would be a great gift for your friends and clients this holiday season. Just order today at bringthetasty.com. Now, if you tweet at me or DM me or Ed and show us a picture or your order, people have already been doing this. I'm going to do, around the holidays, I'm going to do something special for those of you that reach out and purchase Goodness Steak Seasoning. No sugar or SMG. I like this stuff. Ed, it is.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, Ed. Well, I mean,
a late night snack.
Minnesota has great late night options. Always love that city. The city that never sleeps. Is that right? No, it may be somewhere else. All right,
that's
Ed.
That's me who never sleeps.
It is. Yeah, there's a few things defensively that I want to get into. I am going to take us right now, though. It is time for the man, the myth, Glenn Stretch Smith, to share his grades, his special brand of grading. And once again, he is very, very upset with everyone's favorite special teams coach. Here is our interview with Glenn Stretch Smith. All right, it is time for Stretch Plays with our man, Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys coach and scout, joining us on the Doomsday Podcast as he does every Sunday. A miraculous win for the Cowboys. They win this thing 2016, and Stretch, let's start on that defense. I mean, just a remarkable performance. They're down 10-3. You know, Vikings go down there and score right away. You thought, oh, my gosh, there's no way they're going to be able to keep up with them. And really, they didn't do much the rest of the game. Let's start with the back end, though. And, I mean, Cousins, you thought, would end up having a heyday. And this defense did a tremendous job. Start kind of with the back end of this defense, and go from there on your grading.
You know, here's the positive and the upside defensively overall. I think this team is getting better every week. Every week they're starting to expand on the scheme, do some things to me that really are showing a maturity level, a certain level of confidence in what they're seeing and what they're doing. When you look at the back end, I hated that they busted the coverage on the first touchdown. It really was. It was a busted coverage. You got to say, okay, we got to eliminate that. I thought you got a couple of PIs and a holding on Diggs. It was kind of I guess I don't like to kind of bang the officials, but what I see more than anything about this defense in the secondary is they always take great angles. They play with great leverage. When you see them come and tackle, when you see them cover, when you see them cut certain things off, they play with outstanding leverage, and that's the key. It really is the key to, hey, they're not very fast. I mean, everybody wants to, and I get it. I mean, Trayvon Diggs and the things he's done are phenomenal, but he is not some kind of blazer. They're not that fast, the guys. But what I love is the angles, the pursuit angles, always how they're coming downhill, and they're always inside out. And to me, that speaks volumes about coaching and what they're doing, whether it's Al Harris or whoever's coaching the secondary, or the other secondary coach right now. To me, I'm sure Quinn is involved with it, coaching that secondary. They take great angles. This group can't have the mental bust that they had to let Thielen run right through there. But I'm going to tell you what, great angles, give them a B+ and a job well done tonight.
B+ for the secondary. And let's take a look at the linebackers, and Parsons had maybe his best game of the year. I mean, he was making all sorts of plays in space, and it seemed like tonight he was showing out a little bit.
Yeah, and what I love is he's a guy that you can tell he's putting in the time. When I say putting in the time, he knows down in distance when they're going to throw screens. He understands when they're going to run draws. He understands fits, where to get in the defense, where he's supposed to be. I saw some good things tonight. Vander Esch looks like he's kind of starting to show glimpses of what we used to see of him, because he is down in there. Hey, I'm telling you, the linebackers are tonight, when you see how they played and see what they did, and then, of course, again, it is all centered around what Parsons can do, but they're dang good tacklers. That group, you'd have to watch 5 snaps of them and say, hey, right now that group is an A and playing at a very high level, and that's exactly what they got tonight.
All right, some good hitting, and you're right, Parsons' recognition of those things, and then the fact that in space – he just makes great tackles, and nobody seems to get away from him. And I thought that was big. Okay, let's take a peek at the defensive line. And I know he had got a couple of really bad calls on him late. I saw McCarthy go down and try to calm him down a little bit, but Gregory has become a force. And I go back and forth on this defense. I mean, some games you're like, well, Diggs is the best player. A lot of games you think maybe Gregory's the best player on this defense.
I mean, when you see how he totally changes the protection, they better know where he's at all times. That, to me, that speaks volumes. When other coaches are changing their protections, quarterbacks are turning the protections, sending the back that way to chip him, trying to get him some help out there, trying to get, you know, Darrishaw, their left tackle, some help from time to time. That speaks volumes when Zimmer and his staff are having to, again, turn that protection to account for Randy Gregory. You know that is immediate respect. Here's what I'm telling you, too. When you see how this line and a bunch of guys that we don't even know, Watkins, guys that we don't even know their names, staying in their lanes, disciplined, collapsing the pocket, being able to bull rush and absolutely get Cousins to where he was almost just having to fall down because there was no place for him to even shuffle up in that pocket. I mean, a great job. What I love, too, is when they got down in third short and Quinn put them in a bare front where they cover up all five offensive linemen, you see guys getting penetration. See guys getting up the field. And to me, that really an outstanding defensive effort tonight. I'm giving the defensive line an A as well.
Wow. Wow, the harshest grader in the business has given A's at linebacker and defensive line. And I agree with you. Hamilton, whether it be Dorrance Armstrong, Basham, Gregory, Odigizuwa, they were all rolling right through there. And that was a tremendous showing from that group. Now, switch over to the O-line. Thought that was interesting. Tyron Smith gets banged up, has an ankle, and pretty much most of the second half, he's out of there, and they have Nsekhe over there at left tackle. And then you noticed also we'll include the McGovern and Collins playing a little bit in that inverted bone or whatever you want to call that, where they actually had a couple of extra linemen there in the backfield. What did you think of the offensive line's performance?
Well, I thought they did a good job tonight. I mean, now you got to keep in mind, you know, they were playing against, I think, a pretty good Minnesota defense who can give you some problems up front. I mean, Zimmer changed his going from some 8-man front, and then they would drop some. I really thought that the offensive line did a pretty decent job of kind of really trying to create some lanes to run the football. What I liked the most is what you talked about earlier. They're using their personnel to the best of their ability. And when I'm saying the best of their ability, you see Lyle Collins and what a balanced guy he is. How he's not afraid to, you know, get in that, you call it inverted. I kind of called it a flying wishbone. I had big flyers up there, big guys just going in and flying around and trying to hit somebody. I like that little scheme, and guess what? It's not going to surprise me to see them throw the ball off of that. There were times that I saw, again, a couple of holding calls that I wish they would eliminate, and especially, you know, Connor, he's got to be more physical at guard, and you've got to not have critical holding penalties in those situations. And for that, I mean, you can't give them the best grade, but I'm giving the offensive line tonight a B for the job they did protecting Cooper Rush.
Kind of a workmanlike effort there, but they kept him on his feet and he was able to move around a little bit. Cooper Rush, man with a nice red beard there. Okay, the wide receiver and tight end, Schultz has been really, really good. I didn't sense that Rush was quite as adept at using those tight ends as Dak was, but he certainly, with Amari and CD, he obviously felt really good throwing to those guys. What did you think about the wide receivers?
Well, I'm going to start with the tight ends. I saw some things tonight out of Schultz blocking the edge that I didn't think I'd ever see. I was very critical when they took him out of Stanford. I thought he couldn't block me in a phone booth. Well, you know what? He's gotten better. He's gotten better with his hands, with his initial step off the ball, the angles that he takes. I think Jarwin is a decent blocking tight end. We saw Sprinkle come in the game tonight. They played a few three tight ends looks. So tight ends wise, blocking at the line of scrimmage, they did a pretty decent job. I think Cooper does, the Cooper Rush is not very comfortable with booting and getting outside and throwing those flat routes. I mean, the play before he hit Wilson for the touchdown, literally he runs a play action boot out the right side, and he is wide open. The tight end is wide open in the flat. He throws the ball down around his feet. So a lot of that is feel. A lot of that is getting used to. But again, to me, when you see the tight ends run their routes and know how to run those stick routes, they do a good job of that. Receivers, I was really disappointed. CD had an opportunity to catch that slant. And when you're in there with a quarterback like that, you got to catch that ball and get it up the field. I saw Wilson tonight was awesome. I mean, to make the throw he made on the reverse pass, to see Amari Cooper over there and he's rolling his hamstring out with a softball, to see him come back in and then catch the fade. I mean, it was really it's so refreshing to watch this group and watch them as a group, because, I mean, literally it is a group, and it's hard to believe they're still missing, I mean, Gallup, who's a hell of a wide receiver. So right now, that group, the tight ends, what they're doing in the passing game, how they're blocking, the things that they're doing all together in this game, I gave them a B again because of the drop by CD in that critical situation. But they're playing really well as a group.
All right, the running backs, I thought Pollard missed a blitz pickup on that fumble in there, and I don't know what Connor Williams was doing. He just kind of, he almost looked like they weren't going to allow him to jump on that thing. I love the center, by the way, caught a ball tonight on a tip ball and then kind of handed it off to the tight end. I really kind of like what he showed. But, you know, you're a huge fan of Zeke. Zeke had one of those moments tonight that was just, you know, there's only a few backs that can make that play, where on a huge play, he just ran over some dudes, and just it's just, that was just such a our guy is way better than your guy's moment, and it happened at the biggest time of the game.
And he had a blitz pickup in the first half where he split a linebacker's chin. I mean, he come across and hit him right in the mouth. To me, he's so physical in the things that he can do. And again, there's three or four plays in every NFL game that really dictate the flow of the game and really usually the outcome of the game. And so many times Zeke puts himself in that position. He is a hell of a football player. He's a great blocker. He has a great understanding of what to do, when to do it, where to go. Pollard has got to understand you cannot cut a guy loose on that side when you're inside out. When I'm saying you're inside out, you saw the 3 technique, you saw the 5 technique, and he saw Xavier Woods over there. You got to come all the way over there and hit Xavier Woods in that situation. You cannot turn him scot-free and let him just drill your quarterback for a really what I thought was going to be a game-changing play at the time and a fumble that Minnesota was able to get on. I'm dinging Pollard for that. You got to know better than that. I think he'll tell you, I got to know better than that and to go inside out on that. I'm giving that group a B as well, Matt, but they got to, Pollard has got to get better if they're going to keep him in there in those third down situations from a blitz pickup standpoint.
I am amazed that Pollard, who's known as the quick, flashy back, seems to be so good at yards after contact, and some of those stats are pretty remarkable with him, because you don't always think of him as being that guy, but he's good at keeping his balance. Okay, let's talk about Cooper Rush. He's going to get a lot of the attention, and this is a huge moment for him. Let's hope we don't see him again this season, but a tremendous night for him, and this may very well be the peak of his NFL career. And if that happens, then that's just fine. What did you make of his play?
I mean, again, he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of velocity on the ball. He's not gonna drive it down the field and haul you with his arm. He's not gonna really spin it, you know, tight and tight windows. He's not going to do that. But what I did like tonight that I saw of him was he was able to manage the football game. He was able to get his team in the correct place. he was able to, and he threw the ball away in some situations. He made a really bad read right there in the first half, but it got the tight end running up the seam right into a cover two look, and he throws a pick. It was a really poor ball. But when you see what he did to get his team in a position to go win a football game, it really is remarkable. And then he made, you know, he made a couple of nice throws. Again, it was really an eerie feeling to watch it. Of course, with it being Halloween night and all the things that are going on, you're just like, God, that ball, it feels like it would sit in the air and at times forever. And then he would go out there and, you know, like I said, on that boot, and he threw it almost into the shoestrings of the tight end, and then he makes a great throw on the touchdown, on the first touchdown. Managing the game wise, good job. He practiced with the ones all week. You could tell he got the reps. You could tell he was somewhat comfortable. There were times when the play clock looked like it was going to expire, and he would kind of get it off. And so you got to give him some credit in those situations for managing the football game. But you can't turn the ball over. You can't get hit from the front side, fumble that ball. Though to me, those were critical turnovers. Bottom line was he got it done, made the throw when they won the football game, and I'll give him a B for that as well.
Well, and another feather in the cap of Kellen Moore, because he managed this quarterback and they were able to get a win. And I don't know what you thought. As I kind of was monitoring all the social media, and you know, you and I both have people that we know on that medical staff there, that we've seen guys that are true game time decisions. As we got closer to game time, the thing with Dak seemed a little like a show. You know, like I think they probably had made that decision by Friday or Saturday, and but they didn't. You know, obviously they didn't want the Vikings to know. So I don't know if you agree with that or not, but to me, that all seemed like kind of a big hubbub they put on. Because
I agree with you. I mean, they let Cooper Rush take the reps for the ones. I anticipated that. Hey, they were going to start him. They were going to rest Dak. Maybe they felt like they could go out and bang it around with Minnesota and get an ugly win. It seems like kind of everything they're doing right now kind of feels like the right thing, except for the special teams coach. For crying out loud, Mosley, how many times are we going to have to talk about that guy? That guy who gets it up, it's fourth and five. You got a great stop in the situation, and you go for a damn block, the guy jumps offsides. I mean, he does some of the dumbest things at the worst times of the football game. It's the guy that wears about four wristbands, long sleeve shirt. I mean, at some point, I'm tired. The special teams is a play in the game, and they're very important plays in the game. But I'm talking about this guy. I'm tired of talking about this guy. But I'm not tired enough to tell you I'm giving him an F. Give him an F.
Always worried about your household there. You've got a son, young son, that's a great quarterback, up-and-coming quarterback out there in the Aledo area. And I always I wonder if all this hollering is going to wake him up. But an F for the special teams coach, John Fossil, on Bradley Anae's offsides. And by the way, it did. That gave up a field goal. At the time, it made it 10-3, and you thought it was going to lead to – and could you see the exasperation on Mike McCarthy? I mean, he was just like, can you even believe it? But I'm with you, and I like that you put that squarely on John Fossil. Stretch, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done this evening, and we appreciate you.
I appreciate it. Have yourself a grand evening. I'm surprised we're not talking about the official beverage of the Doomsday podcast, Miller Lite. But I guess Stretch hadn't done a good job of promoting Miller Lite, so to hell
hold,
with it.
Hold, hey, off, hey, hey, hold on 1 second. Hanging out with the friends doesn't require a special occasion. In fact, some of the best hangouts are just you, a few friends, and some Miller Lite. No strict dress code required, Stretch. There's something satisfied about just kicking back and feeling like your true self. And then, Stretch, I was hanging out with my friend Jason tonight, and he ordered a couple of Miller Lights. and seemed to really enjoy himself. No gimmicks, just great beer for people who like beer. And Miller Lite, great taste, 96 calories. Go to MillerLite.com/doomsday to find delivery options near you, or you can pick up some Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. It's Miller time. Stretch, would you agree that it is indeed Miller time?
It is time. It is time to crack one open. Have yourself a grand evening, Mosley.
Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. The official beer of Glenn Stretch Smith. And Ed, the F was given there to John Fossil, and it was for that Bradley Anae. And I think Stretch's contention was that he was sending him to try to block that punt. That's why he took off, like, you know. And so I don't know if it's totally fair to put all that on John Fossil, but at the time it happened, Ed, that did look like it was going to be a major problem because the defense had done a great job. It got off the field, and then on a 4th and 5, offsides. I mean, Ed, think about how many times over the last couple of years or few years, just plays like that. And then, oh, by the way, 3 more late in the game, 3 15-yard unnecessary roughness, penalties, late hit type things. And yet the Cowboys were able to overcome all this. Yeah, that's what seems so different about this team.
Yeah, I think all along they've demonstrated the great talent that they have on their frontline players, but beyond that they have, you know, unique depth. They've been playing at a disadvantage. They haven't had DeMarcus Lawrence. They haven't had that's the highest paid defensive player in franchise history. They haven't had Michael Gallup, who was a, you know, clear ability to be a number two receiver at worst. In fact, you know, that big pass play that you were talking about that tied the game at 10 on the first possession of the second half with Cooper Rush throwing it to Cedric Wilson, you know, in that moment, it kind of typified what this team is all about. They talk about the brotherhood and all that. But they didn't have either one of their week one starting tackles at that time. Tyron Smith was also out of the game on the left side. Their backup quarterback throws a touchdown pass, their longest in 3 years, to a guy who was the number four receiver when the season started. And all that happens in that moment to tie a game for them on the road in a hostile environment. So it is pretty remarkable. And, you know, I don't think the defense was impressive in, like I said, they won on third down. They didn't create short fields. I would have thought that they would have needed to create some short fields. Instead, I thought really Cooper Rush was playing on a long field almost all night long. Almost always their drive started at the 20 or worse than that. So they very rarely had good field position. And, you know, you talk about they overcame those penalties in the fourth quarter. They overcame the missed field goal early in the game. They did overcome the offside that created another set of downs that the Vikings turned into not 7 points, but 3. So the defense minimized the damage in certain situations. So I mean, McCarthy's talked about, you know, complimentary football. I think that's what we saw again tonight. And he talked tonight about, hey, this was the greatest adversity that we've faced yet. I mean, that's really 2 road games in a row where they've overcome an awful lot, you know, going up to New England where they had never won, and beating the greatest coach in the history of the game, something they'd never done. And again, overcoming the adversity of having the game tied in the final couple minutes and then winning in overtime. I think this team's got some character. It's got some character that they haven't always had. And I think it starts with number 4, whether he's playing or he's coaching like he was tonight.
Yeah, he had the headset on. And I like what you said earlier. You know, he came racing in there. I think he was very happy for Rush. And then, you know, I think he has a great shot at playing next week. And I just, when you look at the NFC and the team, the one team they lost to did not perform well today and got beat by a team that had to be led by Trevor Siemian. And Ed, you're a guy that's had some connection over the years, and and you have homes in Colorado, so you're familiar with Simeon. But I mean, yeah. There's another backup. Wasn't today an interesting, by the way? Mike White, as you noted, was drafted by the Cowboys in the fifth round. Mike White has a huge day for the Jets.
400 yards and three touchdowns.
They beat Joe Burrow and the Bengals. And Simeon comes in off the bench and leads a win over Tom Brady and the Bucks, and basically win that thing on a pick six off Tom Brady. And so it was a great day for backups. And it is funny.
Geno Smith won, too, as a backup for Russell Wilson in Seattle. So yeah. At least four backup quarterbacks won. And Cooper Rush was one of them. And, you know, to kind of maybe put things in perspective about how hard it is to win with a backup quarterback, Mike McCarthy's record since 2017 without his starting quarterback going into the game tonight, 7-13. He was 3-6 without Aaron Rodgers and 4-7 without Dak Prescott. So now he's 8-13. So it's never an easy thing when you have a great quarterback to lose him. And obviously part of building the roster is having a quality backup. And we didn't know if the Cowboys had a quality backup, but I think now we have a better sense that they're capable of winning a game here and there if necessary without Dak Prescott. With Cooper Rush, who you would assume would play even better the next time as he's had this experience tonight. But, you know, I talked to Mike Zimmer during the week, our old friend, former, 13-year assistant coach in Dallas, now the head coach in Minnesota. And when I thought Dak was going to play, I asked him about, you know, how he thought Dak would manage the injury if he couldn't extend plays and get outside the pocket. And he said, I think he's capable of winning a game like this even if he's not mobile and he has to play from the pocket. And I said, how much would your strategy defensively change if it's not Dak, but it's Cooper Rush making his first start? And he said, he's very honest. He said, oh, it'll change. He said, I would imagine we'd probably try to make him beat us. And he did try to make them beat him, and Cooper Rush was up to the challenge.
Yeah. I think this is one that Zimmer is going to think they let get away.
It's a really bad loss for Mike Zimmer and the Vikings.
Had an incredible opportunity. They came into this game 3-3, could have kind of gotten back in things, and they lose the game. And I see Mike over there. I'm glad Mike's doing okay, though, physically. You know, that eye situation he had was very scary. And, you know, I love Adam Zimmer, always have, and Adam listens to this podcast, by the way, Ed, every week. I don't know if he'll listen to this one after his Vikings loss to us, but he's been a great friend over the years. And I remember as a young reporter at the Morning News, waiting on the tarmac as Mike Zimmer came back on a private jet out there at Love Field, and he had been offered the head coaching job at Nebraska, and he turned it down. Bill Callahan ended up taking that job at Nebraska, as I recall. And Jerry did something Jerry doesn't like to do. He gave Zimmer a raise that got him to $1 million as the defensive coordinator for Bill Parcells. And then he also, because Sean Payton had a chance to take the Raiders job right around that same time, he bumped him up to $1 million. And at the time, Ed, that was considered like, oh my gosh, the world.
Well, he might be writing some checks to keep his coordinators after this season, too.
He might have to.
Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore might be deserving of raises to turn down potential head coaching jobs elsewhere. But that's not a concern for Jerry today. Jerry's feeling pretty good from what I saw as he was leaving the locker room tonight.
Did he seem like he had a pep in his step?
He had plenty of pep in his step.
All right, Ed. Cowboys now, Denver. Obviously, that I'm looking down the road. Thanksgiving. That's the Raiders.
Yeah, Denver.
Come in.
They had Atlanta. The next two games are at home. Noon starts.
Yeah.
The Broncos obviously beat the Washington football team today, which did a service for the Cowboys in the division standings. The Broncos are a team. They didn't have Von Miller today, one of the great pass rushers. And there's been some speculation that if Denver had lost today, right before the trading deadline, maybe they would move him to, he's in the last year of his contract. He's like 33 years old. He's had some injuries recently, but one of the really great pass rushers, maybe they would move him to a contender. And Dallas was among the teams mentioned, although Jerry had said this week that he did not see adding any pass rush help, knowing that he's got DeMarcus Lawrence coming back sometime eventually. But yeah, Denver's a good team on defense. They spent a lot of money on their secondary. Probably hasn't played as well as they had hoped. They're very limited on offense in terms of their ability to score points. I got Jerry Jeudy back today, but they don't have CJ Hamler, who was their big vertical threat. And, you know, with Teddy Bridgewater now, they really, I know talking to John Elway before the draft, that his frustration has just been so enormous about ever since Peyton Manning retired. This team can't score points. They score 20 points on average every week, and that's not going to be near enough against Dallas if that's back.
Yeah, I agree. And if I were you, I would take a quick trip to Denver to do a little research and see if you can figure out what's going on there. Ed, tremendous work this evening. Thank you for staying up late and heading over there. And I know exactly where you are in Minneapolis. It is it's a good city. Always this time of year, weather's starting to change a little bit. You don't want to be there at the end of November or end of December, but this time of year it's fine. But Ed, thank you for everything, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Yeah, I always love doing the Doomsday Podcast after a great game, win or lose. It's always interesting to kind of dissect it, share the highlights and the behind the scenes, and hopefully we've been able to do that again for our listeners.
I know, Ed, and the great thing is our listeners get revved up, especially after wins, and there's a ton of activity on Twitter, and now they have an expectation, and we put a lot of pressure on Frito. They want that thing out there as quickly as possible, and that's why I'm going to stop talking right now.
Say good night, Matt.
good night, Matt. For Ed Werder and Mark Frito Friedman, Frito Nation Productions from far north Dallas. Good night, everybody.